everybody. This is Armand DeBell with Lisa Arnone here doing The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you interesting stuff today. We have been talking about our series of education for psychologists, which you've heard me describe enough. And this is series 10. I think it's today 10.
Yes, today.
This is it, which may hold the series for a while. We have to stop at 10 because I know they take this, and I know one place said they were going to be presenting it in a university for students to have available. So what we were talking about yesterday, which you may or may not have caught, we're talking about the role of the unconscious and what the unconscious is and what the unconscious is like and where this concept of the unconscious comes from. And in the middle of that, in the interim, I said, so let me show you how the unconscious works. Would you please send me emails that are in response to something that we have in common? So I'm picking something we have in common, and I chose my voice. Many of you have been listening to my voice for many years, and you've heard it, and you've listened to it, and everybody says it's unique, and it has a certain meaning to them. So I said, okay, so send me what this voice means to you. You can still do that, by the way, if you want to do that even now during the program. You could email me that information, armand@thepositivemind.com. But we've got so many responses. And a lot of the responses we got were related to exactly what we're talking about. Because what I'm saying is the unconscious is a repository of information into which there's a collection of material meant to somehow be available to keep the structure, the being, whatever it is, safe. And that's it. And what we want to welcome into it is that in that unconscious, it's ready. If you get unsafe, unconscious comes up with something to worry about. For example, if as a child you got bit by a snake and you hear as you see a snake today, a part of you winces because a child part of you says a snake was bad. But if you grew up in a country where snakes were dangerous, you might have it somewhere even in your genetics that snakes are to be watched. So responses to the voice were replete with mentions of safety. And here's some of the responses that we got. Do you have any over there? Okay. One person said, as I've listened to your voice in the past, it's like Raisin Bran. And then when you had Roberta Atti, it was like Raisin Bran. She was the raisins and I was the bran. And they said it was your voices were so soothing. So soothing is a big word here. Your voice is soothing. Others speak about how it's exciting to be able to listen and to know that you're going to learn something, like the best teacher. Others called it the voice of intelligence. And others said it's a sexy voice. It's like getting the benefit. Let me read you a couple of others that we got here, and you'll see what I'm talking about. From Susan. Susan said, what does the voice mean? I find Armand's voice very reassuring in its tone, and it portends that I and other humans can be understood. How does that relate to safety? Man, didn't you ever want to be understood? So this voice reminds you, this program reminds you that people can be understood. And so whenever you hear this voice, it goes somewhere into that chasm of a brain, and it says, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. Lisa said to me a little earlier, she always remarked at how, with whoever I was speaking to, you remember what you said to me about that?
Yes, I said that, you know, there was something very comforting about listening to you be so kind to people, that people would talk to you about their problems, and your response was always kind and accepting, and that felt very soothing.
So this is not about Armand DeMille. This is about the fact that there is kindness on the air, and it manifests through a gravelly voice. And therefore, the kindness exists in its way, puts a little nice safety net over you. You want to know it exists. You want to know that it's not all about fear. If you listen to the other programs on WBAI, a lot of them are about fear. They're about frightening you, and not that they shouldn't. I mean, Amy Goodman keeps reminding me how neglectful we are of the world. Gary Null tells me how afraid I should be about everything around me in one way or another. You know, and it's like there are fears, and there are worries, and there are concerns, and those are all good to have. But some part of you is yearning to rest, to relax, to go to sleep. Here's another concept. What does the voice mean? To me, your voice emanates warmth, kindness, and intelligence. You sound like somebody who's trustworthy. You're somewhat like an older uncle. Now, that's a very interesting thing because elders get gravelly in their voices. And very often people associate the gravelly sound with some kinder elder. Kinder elder? Are you a kinder elder? I like Ludwig, who wrote in and he said, five words: soothing, fathering, mentoring, non-judgmental, and accepting. Now, can you imagine in Ludwig's life, do you think he ever had this in his life anywhere? But to know it exists, to hear it, a beautiful thing. So this is not about Armand DeMille. Please, this is not complimentary to me. I mean, I've got a voice that's damaged. You know why it's, you know what a voice sounds like this? First, because when I was a kid, I was used to imitate one of my great mentors, the guy who took care of me, and he had a deep, deep voice. But then later I went on growing up smoking cigarettes, ripping my heart, my throat to shreds that way as well. But whatever it is, it wound up being the voice that it is now, meant to come to you, not anything that I did. However, there are associations, and that brings us to our program today. Our program... Oh, I like this one, just from Bill. When I hear your voice, I realize I'm okay and that I'm really not crazy. Even my quirks and idiosyncrasies, some of my actions are based on genetics, environment, and or heredity. And it's somehow reassuring. So let's talk about this unconscious. So when we look at our unconscious, we look at something, and I want to talk about what Freud called the id, the ego, and the superego. Very fascinating concept. Now, this is a concept. It's a structure. Sigmund Freud had theories about what was at the basis of all human functioning. He had an idea called infant sexuality, which many people refuted. He talked about the sexual drive a great deal, as he would have when he's probably right about 90% of the time. But, you know, he made mistakes. He was creating something. He was observing something for the first time. If you'd like to see a wonderful book about the discovery of psychoanalysis, it's a book called When Nietzsche Wept. And it's by Erwin Yalom. Have you read that? No. It's fantastic. When Nietzsche Wept. Okay, so we have the id, the ego, and the superego, and we're going to talk about those. The id is that which, where's that definition? The id, three parts are right here. The id is the unorganized part of the personality structure that contains the basic drives. The id contains the libido. Now, you've heard the word libido, which we think of as a sexual libido. Well, the libido really is instinctual force that is unresponsive to the demands of reality. It is a force. When your libido is at force, it says, I want, and I'm going to get. Now, that's often associated with sex, because sex has that kind of drive to it. I want, and I'm going to take. But I think libidinal drive is also when a person is trying to take something that isn't theirs as well. The id is unconscious by definition. It's the dark, inaccessible part of our personality. What little we know of it, we learn from our studies of dreams, the construction of neurotic symptoms. We approach the id with analogies. We call it chaos, a cauldron full of seething excitations. It's filled with energy reaching it from the instincts, but it has no organization, produces no collective will, only a striving to bring about satisfaction of the instinctual needs subject to the observance of the pleasure principle. Got this? So it's a hot spot. The id is contrary impulses side by side without canceling each other out. I want to eat. I want to have sex. But it's not like I'm going to have sex, then I'm going to eat. They're like not related. I think I'll have sex and eat at the same time because they work. All of these forces are working. They're alive. But they don't cancel each other out. They don't moderate each other. There is nothing in the id that could be compared with negation. Nothing in the id which corresponds to the idea of time. So the id is the first thing we're born with. It's present at birth. It's laid down by constitution. Above all, the instincts which originate come out, and we have the first thing the id wants, feed me, right? What does the baby want? Feed me. Nah, give me food. Give me food. Give me food. That's all it's about at the beginning. Feed me, right? And from there, the id takes on a number of developmental things according to the building of the body. Now, the body has hormones and organs and things that come about, and all these become the great reservoir of libido, which is part of the id. So now, the id has this desire, this strong passion and thing running around inside of all of you. You all have id-driven personalities somewhere. Some of you were told that all of your id, all of your drives were bad. You shouldn't want sex. You shouldn't want to eat that stuff. You shouldn't want this. You shouldn't want that. You shouldn't want freedom. You shouldn't want to run. You shouldn't want to do whatever you want to do whenever you want to do it. And some of them you're either taught to moderate, or somehow you know you should moderate. Now, somehow inside there is a part of us that learns either from society, from religion, from school, from our parents, from our peers, that there are just certain things you don't do. Like, for example, there is a message inside the body that kind of works through the pheromones. There is a part of you that says, there's a part of you that says, I must have sex, because that's your job, right, to recreate. So I've got to have sex. So there's sex drive, big sex drive. But sex drive and what kind of makes the sex drive work has a lot to do with pheromones. That if your body can perceive that the smell of the person who you are attracted to can in somehow add to your development, then somehow it directs the sex drive at that person. Whereas if that person doesn't have that fragrance, odor, or smell that they give out, you may not feel that sex drive towards that person. So you could be in a room with three people, and they could all be naked, and you could feel turned on by two of them and completely not turned on by the third. Many of you wonder why, when you finally get to a relationship after a number of years with someone, they feel like your brother or sister, but you don't feel like having sex with them anymore. This is because of pheromone change. This is because of the change in the smells and the attitudes that go with it, which we'll have to discuss at another time, and we've discussed before. But we're talking about the id, which is this driving force. And then we have this other part of us that inhibits it, which I'm going to talk about. So you have a drive to want to have sex or want to hurt something, and something inhibits you. Something makes you stop. Well, even in your genetics, there is a part of us that says you do not respond in pheromones to your immediate family. So even though you may feel sexual and feel a certain way, you don't feel sexual with your father. You don't feel sexual with your mother because their smell is too identical to yours. And the genetics say if you have sex with your father or mother, you're going to give off offspring that are not going to be very successful. So the inhibiting part of your sexuality very often is built into another part of your unconscious mind, which we call, or Freud called, the superego. Now I bring you the superego. The superego, unconscious, without even knowing it, stops you from doing certain things. You don't even think about it. I think I'll hit that guy. Nah, I'm not going to hit him. You don't even think twice about it. I think I'll take this. No, I won't take it. So some is based on learning. Some of it is conscious, but a lot of it is unconscious. Unconscious selection not to do things. It inhibits the libido. It inhibits the id. So unconsciously, without even knowing it, you're going through libido and you're going through repression of the libido by the superego. So get what your superego is. Superego could manifest in the form of guilt. It could manifest in the form of responsibility. Any kind of thing, but you barely are conscious of it. Some of it leaks into consciousness, but much of it is unconscious. So the part of you that inhibits, the libidinal part of you, is the superego. So now you have a superego that's saying no, no, no to a lot of things, and society teaches you no, no, no. And watching parents try to teach teenagers why they shouldn't do one thing or another, which is always impossible because the parents were once teenagers themselves, and you know you can't teach teenagers to do things just by telling them don't do it, just say no. But if you say it often enough, they believe you drive it into the mind of the child, and the child eventually takes it as part of their unconscious superego. So in other words, they will be good because they're unconscious about it. Now this sounds like, how would that possibly work? I knew a woman who was from Canada, and she had a mother in Canada, and she had a mother was maybe in her 70s, and mom was like a dark lady. She was just a lady who always saw the worst side of things. And she told the story. She's a therapist, and she told the story about going up to her mother's place up in Canada. And she was sleeping, and while she was sleeping, she opened her eyes and saw her mother in the room saying things to her like, don't trust him, don't trust him, don't trust him. The only one who will ever love you is your mother. Repeating that over and over again in their native Romanian language. Just repeating it. So she first opened her eyes, and she didn't know it. She thought she was dreaming. And then she realized what her mother was doing. That her mother not only did this then, but she flashed back on the fact that when she was a child, her mother used to pick her up and rock her and speak to her about things to watch out for. And she saw that she was being programmed in the unconscious by her mother. My dear friends, if you're ever tempted to say romantic, friendly things to a baby that's in your arms, please stop yourself. Because this hypnotically available mind can take stuff and drive it all the way deeply down into the unconscious in a place where they don't even know it exists. So many of us out here are inhibited by things we don't know what's inhibiting us. Why is it there? Well, kind of driven into the unconscious somewhere in early childhood. You know, the good thing about therapy is it uncovers that. It uncovers that a little bit. One of the ways that you uncover it is you take two sides and you have an argument. You imagine that you're one side. Let's say you're your id. I want to eat that food. And then you say, okay, I'm going to be the other side. I'm going to be the superego, and I'm going to say, you shouldn't have that food because it's no good for you. And then we have you switch roles again, and you say on that other side, but I want to have that food. Now, herein comes the third part of our brain called the ego. The ego, which is not the superego, the ego is more conscious. The ego is the part of you that makes the deal between the two. It says, okay, Ed, you want this food? Okay, superego, you don't want me to have this food right now? We'll have the food later. We won't eat anything all day, and then we'll have it for dessert. A deal. The id, the ego, and the superego. So the ego is the part of us that's kind of, and I know this is really almost not giving it its due. In fact, I think I'll read it to you. It seeks to please the id's drives in a realistic way that will benefit in the long term rather than bringing grief. At the same time, the ego attempts to mediate between the id and reality. It is often obliged to cloak commands of the id with its own rationalizations. That gets too hard to understand. The ego separates what is real. It helps us organize our thoughts and make sense of them and the world around us. The ego is that part of the id which has been modified by the direct influence of the external world. The ego represents what may be called reason and common sense, in contrast to the id, which contains the passions. So here we have the id, the ego, and the superego. We got these three parts working at once. We got the id. We got the superego at force, telling you don't do, don't do, don't do, don't do, and what you all shouldn't do, and what you've all learned, and don't touch yourself, that's no good. And all these funny things that we go through. Yesterday, I was preparing a meal for a friend, and somebody had sent me a new machine that you put all the vegetables in this machine, and you put it, it's a kind of a blender, and you put all the vegetables, but you put them in with the skin. You get organic stuff, right? You put it in with the skin, with the seeds. You don't cut out anything, right? And you put it in this blender, and it's a very powerful little blender, and you power it, and then you take out the food, which is mushy, and you drink it that way, because you get the seeds and the skin and so on and so forth. So I tried it for the first time, and I was with a friend, and my friend said, she can't drink it. And I said, why? She said, because there are skins in there. And I said, I know. She says, ooh, I find skin slimy. I said, but wait a minute. The skins are all chopped up inside, and you could tell that there was something that was an aversion from childhood related to skins of anything, especially skins of peaches. You know, skins of, that the, it's the outside skin that makes me, that I have an inhibition to. She said, I'll taste it, but I can't have it because it has skins in it. I thought, all right. Look at how strongly the unconscious is. Look how strong, look how powerful it is. So the power of the unconscious, my friends, is so big that we don't know. The libido you can't see. It's always creeping up behind you, making demands on you. Come on, gimme, 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 gimme. And the other part of you is saying, shut up, shut up, shut up. You got to go on a diet. You got to not do this. You got to do that. You got to not have this. You can't have that. And then we have this guy in the middle who is saying, wait a minute, wait a minute. If we do this, can't we do this? And if we try this, can't we do this? That was the beginning. That was Freud's concept of the id, ego, and superego. Then another guy came along, Eric Byrne, and I think he did a much better structure of it. He called it the child, the parent, and the adult. Eric Byrne, in a thing called transactional analysis, said the child, he called the id, not only the id, but he said that's the child part of the personality. He called that the child. And then he said the ego we call the adult. He said this is the adult who does the negotiating, and the parent is the one who inhibits. Now, there are two kinds of parents, the ones who inhibits. The two kinds of parents are either critical parents or nurturing parents. So if you're going to be parental towards somebody, you can either do it critically or you could do it nurturing. If you're going to be, if you're a child, you could either be an okay child, a hurt child, or a rebellious child. The hurt child is the depressed child. So if you're depressed, you're a depressed child. The rebellious child is just as you could imagine it. And the okay child is a happy, smiling kid. When a kid, and in the inside is the adult. There's the adult in the middle saying to the kid, you want a banana? You can't have a banana now. We have to go to the store to get it. Right? The parent is saying, okay, you could have a banana, but you know you shouldn't have more bananas than you should have, and so on and so forth. The adult is doing the negotiation in the middle. If the parent instead says to the child, you can't have a banana, you're too fat, then the child's request just went to a parent, and the parent talked back in such a way that the child got hurt or rebelled. This internal reaction that we have with ourselves, where we talk to ourselves and then we criticize ourselves, results in the child going either underground or rebelling, usually going underground, and it usually results in depression. So the model here is child, and you can learn more about this by looking up transactional analysis. The model here is that the child, when the child is not is looking for something, if it's not greeted by a nurturing parent, then the child feels bad. So this is Armand DeMille with you, with Lisa Ranoni. What are we doing here? What do you hear in my voice? You hear a nurturing parent voice. You hear an adult voice. You hear both. You hear a child voice in me, where I could fool around and have a lot of fun with you. So you've got all those things being present on the radio with you. And what does that voice represent? The voice represents there's an okay world out there. We could be in this okay world, and we could be okay with each other. I do not take credit for this. I'm not putting myself up on a pedestal and saying you should buy dolls of me or books written by me or anything like that. I happen to be gifted. They gave me a gift. The gift they gave me was the voice, the intelligence, the friends like Lisa to work with, and the vehicle, which is WBAI, and more important than any of those, the vehicle I got was you, the audience. Because there is nothing works better than that. So this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break in a couple of minutes. We will be back with you next Tuesday, just to let you know. This series is available to you on the internet, starting with Psychology for Therapists, starting with series number one. When we get back, we want to take your phone number, your phone calls again at 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. The series is available on thepositivemind.com. ThePositiveMind.com. If you have not cashed in your premiums, we've gotten to just about everybody who's made a donation, and now we have made our calls to you. If you haven't heard from us, or for any reason you haven't called in to cash in on your donation that you made to the station to get that one-time meeting, I'm looking forward to it. I'll have time opening up in a couple of weeks. I'd really like to see you. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes, and I'll play you another voice. We'll be right back.
Venda por mi, vende we. Venda por mi, vende we. Choco cute uno baba. What choco cute uno baba. What in the vindara nambimbi we. What in the vindara nambimbi. We bend the way.
Attract a new audience. Hey, you've just been passing through your dials and suddenly you heard that voice and you said, who that? What is that music? You're listening to Bunga from the album Angola 74, which was about Angola, and it was about Bunga Kwenda, K-W-E-N-D-A, in his fight to get back home. And it's about Angola, and it's about what was going on there for him, but through this incredibly, incredibly beautiful voice, or a voice that I find attractive for some strange reason. And that's it, and that's what you're listening to. But here, and besides that, you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, to a radio program hosted by Armand DeMille and assisted by Lisa Arnone. And this program today is meant to teach you about ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life through information. Through information. Yes, my friends, I was reading a description of me that just went up on Wikipedia, where they threw, and you might want to read that, and if you think it's good, you send them good notes. Because if you score me well, you score the thing well, they feel better about it or something. But if it's true, if it's right. But on Wikipedia, what they said specifically was about the radio show and about how we teach feeling stuff to people and how people can be okay with each other.
Well, I was wanted to add to what you had said was your gift, although you might not call this a gift, is that you're also consistently inclined to be kind in response to any thing that comes to you or at you. So that's part of what is achieved, how you achieve with people who are listening.
Inclined to be kind. That should be called in kind. You know, it's really inclined to being kind. I know people who are like that. In kind, inclined to be kind. I am. I do lean in that direction. I think so do most people. But they just, it's so far away from it. I think mine is more near the surface. And I think on the radio, if you take all the other pressures away from me, you see much more of it here. Now, you know, people who come, this is very interesting, people who come in to see me for that 1 hour, the half hour consultation I do, I'm less kind. I mean, I'm kind and I'm loving, but I've got this job and I'm a psycho detective and I'm digging in and I'm going into all the areas that is saying, you know, wait a minute, it doesn't look like you ever felt safe in your entire life. And I'm digging in and people are there and they're weeping and they're saying, oh my gosh, look at what's being uncovered. And they love it. They love it because it happened so fast. But that thing that happens on the radio is quite different. This is quite a venue. We were talking about the parent-adult-child model. We will be taking your calls at 212-209-2900. Just a description for you. Parent-adult-child is talking about id, ego, superego, which most people say you cannot compare that structure to the parent-adult-child model. Well, you know, purists are purists, but the parent part of the personality is a state in which people behave, feel, and think in response to an unconscious mimicking of how their parents acted. The parental part of you, now this is what they would call the superego as well, but in Freud's terms, the superego was even deeper than that, inhibitions that went so much even deeper than just what you learned. But it's an unconscious mimicking of how your parents acted or how they interpreted your parents' action. That means the parental part of you, especially if it's a negative parental part of you, you're being just like your mother. You think you remember the thing you swore, I'll never be like her, boom, and suddenly you'll like her? Because that's where you learn the power comes from. When a baby, when a child is powerless, it looks up at the adults and it says, who has the power here? And it'll look at its mother and its father, and it will figure out which of the two have the most power. If the father has the most power over the mother, the child will imitate the father. Because the child is trained to become powerful in a way that will provide it in the future. So if you are a child and you have two parents, you say, which parent has the most power? And I am going to become like that parent.
But I'm wondering, you're saying that in an external way, that that's the way they will treat others. But is that also the way they're treating themselves?
Perfect, perfect, perfect. That's exactly right. People who are critical of other people are very critical of themselves. You're right. It is reciprocal. It kind of spins right back. It's the way, not the way you treat yourself, it's the way you treat the child in you. So the parental part of you, a person may shout at someone out of frustration because they learned from an influential person in childhood that the lesson that it seemed to be a way of relating that worked, that yelling at somebody is a way that works. Because you saw it as a child. Now, the adult is a state of the ego which is most like a computer processing information, making predictions absent of major emotions. Learning to strengthen the adult is a goal that we have, all of us, so that it could do the negotiation without the passions getting in the way or the repressions. Whereas the child is a state in which people behave, feel, and think similarly as they did in childhood. For example, a person who receives a poor evaluation at work may respond by looking at the floor, crying, or pouting as when they used to when they were scolded as a child. Conversely, a person who receives a good evaluation may respond with a broad smile and joyous gesture of thanks, just as they did as a child. So it goes back on that part of us. You said something about observing a child.
Well, when you were talking about the id, I was thinking, but this would be another example, that I was thinking about what it's like to see a tired two-year-old upset.
Tired, terrible two-year-old.
Yeah.
They call it the terrible twos for that.
But it feels like just a part of the most basic part of who we are in response to disappointment.
Throwing a tantrum.
Yeah.
Having a tantrum is, you know, that we have part of a process here. I don't even know if you know this, Lisa. Aura does this. We get people to the point where, as adults, they throw tantrums. We do a physical thing with them. We have them breathing in a certain way. We have their bodies positioned in a certain way. We have them hitting down with their arms and legs on a mat. It's one of the processes of therapy here. It's probably the most dramatic one that seems to make the most dramatic results, called the intense feeling process. And we encourage people, and of course they're all inhibited at first. They're not going to do it, they're not going to do it, they're not going to do it. Then we add hyperventilation to it, and kind of they lose their mind a little bit. And then Aura, she's like a boat driver, you know. She's going to get you there. She's going to get you there one way or another, encourages you to go there. And people go there, and they go into this incredibly lost state, which is what you see children go into. It's a tirade, you know, and you can go into a tirade, and you can have that happen, and it's an amazing experience.
Well, I think as adults, we're too embarrassed to admit that we have that level of feeling. And so to be given permission, to be free, my goodness.
It's not even, yes, it's right. It's being given permission to let that happen. So throwing a tantrum is a terrific idea. Those of you who have never done one, if you have time this weekend and you can find a nice, safe place to do it, throw a tantrum on your own. Throw a tantrum. See what it's like. It's like your hands and your feet and your head shake back and forth like Rosemary's Baby, you know, and shout and holler and slam down with your hands and your feet, and don't break your bed, but just see what it's like, just to have a tantrum.
I want to know how it ends. How does it end when you have a tantrum as an adult?
What do you mean? I mean, what happens at the end of it?
Yeah, how do you feel? Do you need someone to hold you?
Who's the you?
The person who had the tantrum.
How would I, you mean?
Okay, yeah, how would you?
No, I mean, how would you?
I know how I would. I would want to feel someone's arms around me.
Uh-huh. So I guess you don't know how you would feel. You don't know what you would feel. You suspecting what you're saying is that feels like I would abandon everything, and I would feel lost. I would feel isolated.
Yes.
Which is a terrific experience. A therapist would have you feel that and go through it rather than take it away by holding you. They would say, okay, this is what you got underneath all your terror. Interesting, huh?
Mm-hmm.
You've got to do that. You know, it would be a good idea, Lisa, one day, a few sessions with Aura. She should have a few sessions with you and experience your skills. And you should have a few sessions with her. That's a nice idea. We used to do that around here all the time, exchanging talents. We had bioenergetics, gestalt therapy, and we used to have therapists meeting with other therapists just to see what their skills were like.
Yeah, I would love that.
Great, great, great. We'll set that up again. That's a good idea. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. We're taking your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, I was listening. I was appreciating everything that you were saying. It's something that I was sharing about last night in terms of sometimes my ego feels like a water, my ego is like a motorboat on the water, and then I'm behind the boat, water skiing, jumping the wakes. I'm having a good old time until I hit the water. It could be quite hard, and the pain happens. You were talking about external and internal effects of this, and photographing praying mantises last summer. I was wondering, even this summer, they seem more fearful of my lens, opposed to how last year they weren't aware of me yet. Growing up and having parents that were yellers, you know, is it because maybe their parents were yellers? Is it like this DNA thing that could be an internal link as well as the physical, you know, background being brought up in it? And then me being a parent of four kids, trying to break that chain, you know, trying to get in front of the ego. It's a difficult thing, but the awareness is the beginning of the change.
What's your name?
My name is Caitlin.
Caitlin. Do yeah. this. Let's play this game, okay?
Sure.
Let's say that you are a praying mantis.
Yes.
Now, I want you to say, I am a praying mantis.
I am a praying mantis.
Describe yourself.
I am agile. I like to climb and hang out and observe in quiet meditation. I like to listen and hear, but at the same time, if it's too noisy, I hide. I'm very wary of my surroundings. At the same time, I have to hunt in order to survive. So I also have to know how to disguise myself in order to save myself.
Hmm. Now let me ask you something, Caitlin. Do you know how to disguise yourself in order to save yourself?
Yes, because part of... Yeah, I
Go ahead, talk about it, because I know it, but the audience doesn't.
Well, in terms of just being as sick as my secrets, I mean, I sometimes emotionally I can be a hoarder, and other times I feel like I could be a 007 leaving my, you know, emotional household with a black, you know, with a file of top
You are secrets. A very agile... Very agile, praying mantis. You're very agile, and you're very, you know, also, what about stately? You know, do you see the praying mantis is stately? Do you see it as
yes.
beautiful?
Oh, thanks.
Do you see the beauty in you? The physical
I've
beauty.
Learned,
Have you been able
taken,
to see it?
It's taken me many years to, be able to understand that when I'm living in judgment of others, it's because I'm judging myself.
Okay, but on the good side, what about the good news?
Absolutely.
So here's what's happening with you. When you yeah. look through your lens at a praying mantis, the reason they don't stand there any longer is because they think they're seeing a relative.
Oh, I love it.
Hey, listen, Caitlin, thanks for calling in and thanks for growing.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille speaking with Praying Mantises. Hi there. Hello there. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, yes, Armand. How you doing?
Good.
I appreciate the jazz. I got it a long time ago. Anyway. I just wanted to comment on this young lady that's with you. I guess she's a psychiatrist too or whatever.
Yeah.
Because she was saying that she would probably want to be held, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about that. If I did that, I would probably not want to be held. I think I would more or less be exhausted, tired. Because if I'm going to go and rant and rave to do this for a reason, already in my mind, I'm saying, you know what? I want to come out of this. for something, because I might punch something, stomp. Yeah, I might have to go out into my car, you know, or can't nobody hear me, or just, I used to take martial arts, and sometimes, you know, we used to scream, we used to let out a yell, and that in some way helped our chi, you know.
Sure, now where are you right now?
I'm at home.
You're at home? Are you home alone?
Yes, sir.
Could you give me an example? Could you put the phone about, 6 feet away from you? And give me an example about the kind of shout you would do to release that thing. Just show it to me. Put the phone about 6 feet away.
I got a speakerphone, but okay. 6 feet away, all right, I'll stand at the door. I'll put it on the bed. All right.
Go ahead.
All right, hold on.
Let's hear that sound. Oh, you can do that a little closer to the phone.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right, wait a minute.
Here we go. Do it again. Now, you almost feel that. I could see you could almost feel it because you're doing it for me because you want to get back to the phone.
That was good. You know,
yeah, now, wait. One more thing. One more. Ready? One more time. This time, I want you to feel it for you and go the distance on it. And don't worry about talking to me. We'll talk right after that. But I want you to give me a real one.
All right.
Here comes a real one.
Right? Nothing deep, right?
The real one,
right?
Now stay for a minute. See, now you don't want anybody holding you because there's a piece of you that gets fired up by that.
Yes.
And there's a piece of you that's also in tremendous peace from doing it.
Yes. And I thank you for that. That's why I love you. I've been listening to you for years. But this is the first time I have ever called you. But you touched me right there. She touched me. I don't know, both of you guys. I listen to you guys all the time. But that right there touched something. I think maybe I really needed to do that.
Yeah, what's your name?
My name is Larry.
Larry? Larry, I thank you for calling in. Thank you for teaching us.
Well, thank you, sir, for being you, and God bless you. And
Lisa Arnone is the one who is with me.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure.
I'm going to continue listening. Have a blessed day. You and the young lady that was there.
Lisa, she's right there.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Larry.
You're very welcome. All right. I'm going to continue listening. Bye-bye.
Well, this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. One more of our little slightly exciting programs that would only be allowed here on WBAI. Because otherwise I'd have to be selling you catfish food or something like that right now. Cat food. That's what I used to sell. When I was working for the networks, it was cat food. We'll be back with you next Tuesday. I will be back with you next Tuesday. Lisa will be on vacation. Next Tuesday at 1 p.m. If you want a copy of today's program, if you want to hear it again, you can go to WBAI.org. It'll be available there for a while, or then thepositivemind.com. Send me an email also at armand@thepositivemind.com. Here's a little Benny Goodman.